This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Hockey News Podcast. Matt Larkin here with Ryan Kennedy, Ken Campbell, and in the house with us today is Dominic. I'm going to try to say the name right. Loose Chicken.
Wow, that was a lot better than
that. All right. Loose Chicken sounds better to me, but whatever. And if you know, Dom is here, and that, you know what that means. It means it's round two prediction time. But before we get to that, a few little things to talk about around the NHL regarding the eliminated teams. Housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
That was me knocking.
There's the Coca-Cola.
Diet Coke.
I mean, there's lots to talk about. But first, let's start with Carey Price. Carey Price addressed the media today. And of course, there were questions about his future because this summer he'll be eligible to sign an extension. He'll be UFA in 2018. Where do you guys see the situation? Is there much ado about nothing here? Will Price just come back, or is it not that simple? And does Price have to start reevaluating where he fits in this team and what the team's future is?
I don't think it's much ado about nothing at all. I think it's much ado about lots of things. There's just much of a do.
There's a do all over
there's
the place.
There's a lot of do there. If I'm the Montreal Canadiens, I want to know from Carey Price this summer what his plans are. I want to know if he sees a long-term future in this organization and if he sees himself as a part of it. Because if I'm Carey Price, I'm looking around at this team and this organization and the way it's been built and the personnel and the people running it, and I say to myself, do I have a long-term chance to win with this organization? And if the answer is no, maybe he wants to go after next year. And if that's the case, then I think the Canadians have to be proactive on this. And I tweeted out this weekend that, you know, they should think about, you know, if I'm Jim Nill, I go to Mark Bergevin and say, what does it take to get Carey Price? You know, does it take Tyler Seguin, Jamie Oleksiak, a first-round pick, and something else? I don't know. I don't know what it takes, but I certainly think that there's going to have to be some people that are going to be proactive here.
I think if a trade does happen, from Montreal's perspective, because I still think they're in sort of a state of denial about their team, it's going to have to be a hockey trade. As long as Shea Weber still plays for the Montreal Canadiens, the message to the fans has to be, we're trying to win now. So if you see Carey Price traded, I don't think you can see him traded for a huge package that involves a lot of future guys. The example I brought up earlier today, like let's say Calgary, okay? So if it's Calgary, I don't think you can get a Sam Bennett. It's got to be a Sean Monahan. It's got to be a win now guy.
You
got to
get a number
trade.
One center. You got to get a number one center because they've decided that Alex Galchenyuk isn't that on account of he was on the fourth line for most of the first round. So I think that's a pretty good indication. Whether Galchenyuk has not taken the bull by the horns when he's had the opportunity or they haven't given him the opportunity, that's neither here nor there. I think they've made the decision on Alex Galchenyuk that he's not their number one center. If they make that trade, they have got to get a stud number one center, full stop.
Yeah, and the problem here is, if you look at from Carey Price's perspective, it all comes down to that number one center. You cannot win anything without a number one center. The Habs haven't had one in forever. And like you said, if they've decided that Galchenyuk's not it, then you still don't have one. And the problem with a trade, if you're getting rid of Carey Price and getting, say, Sean Monahan or Tyler Seguin, well, then all of a sudden, I mean, unless you get a Ben Bishop or a Marc-Andre Fleury somehow else, then you've just replaced one problem with another, and you're still an incomplete team.
I'm not sure I agree with that, Ryan, because I think you can win. I think you can win the Stanley Cup with adequate goaltending. Mm-hmm. You don't need superhuman goaltending to win a Stanley Cup, but you need centermen. You need strength down the middle. You absolutely have to have that. So I think if you get that strength down the center, then you address your goaltending and you make it adequate or above average.
And you have guys like Jake Allen who are adequate goaltenders who look superhuman in the playoffs. So I don't really think you need a guy like Price necessarily. But at the same time, with these trades, what Ryan said, opening up holes, if he goes to Dallas suddenly for this Tyler Seguin trade or whatever Ken is suggesting, now Dallas's first line center is Radek Faksa or Jason Spezza. There's big holes there for Dallas. Yep. So Price is in the exact same situation with even worse defensemen in front of him. So,
and this is all predicated on, and like people were chirping me on Twitter because they think I'm stupid.
They were chirping you on Twitter?
What?
No. No.
Nobody said they wanted me to die of cancer, which was good.
Good day.
No, but a lot of people were saying, oh yeah, they're going to trade for Carey Price with a 1 year left on his deal. No, they're not going to trade for it. Nobody's going to trade for Carey Price with 1 year left on his deal. They're going to work out an extension before they make that trade and give up half their team. So,
and one other, just because we're dumping on all facets of Montreal here, the median age of their defense corps is like 47 and getting older. I don't see a future.
Average. It's the average.
The average.
Age.
Fair enough. The average age is 47.
Is that also the number of years left on Weber's deal?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you look at that defense corps, it's not going to get better with time unless they have some serious.
Sergachev's coming in.
Sergachev's coming in, but how quickly? Like, by the time he's good, Andre Markov is going to be a grandfather.
Right.
You know? And I mean, like, they're not a young defense corps other than Sergachev.
He may play like a grandfather clock by that time. Just stand there and guys will go around him.
There you go.
They can get some addition by subtraction. They were a lot better earlier in the series when Alexei Emelin happened to be injured. He comes back. And then the Rangers punt Tanner Glass for someone who's actually good, and suddenly it's a completely different series. I mean, I don't know when they're going to realize Emelin is not who they think they are, who he is, but, I mean, they also don't realize Alex Galchenyuk is a good center for some reason, so there's a lot of weird things going on in that organization.
Yeah, and they also thought for some reason they could win a series with Steve Ott, Andreas Martensson, and Dwight King in the lineup.
Steve Ott played every game. He was in every game.
You know what? He actually wasn't bad. That fourth line actually wasn't bad, which kind of speaks volumes about
the rest.
Everything.
Yeah.
Like, he was. They brought some energy. They did what they were supposed to do. Like, I mean,
But those are your big guys.
If the other lines did their jobs the way the fourth line did, Montreal might have won that series.
It's just interesting because if you're Carey Price,
including Carey Price, you're looking down the rink at
Steve Ott and Dwight King, you're like, this is what they brought in to help me out. Hey, okay, boys. Yeah, well, good, nice hits out there. Hey, Steve, good trash talk.
I just looked at NHL.com the other day, and Sven Andrighetto had 15 points in 19 games for Colorado.
He was getting like 20 minutes a night with McKinnon.
Yeah,
he was unreal.
And then, of course, in game whatever for Edmonton, David DeHarnay scores in overtime just to stick it in a little further.
And P.K. Subban's off to round two.
Did they even play Davidson like at all during the series? Maybe they played like two games?
Yeah.
Speaking of Subban, actually, sort of speaking of Subban, it's not the best segue here, but the Blackhawks, all right? Hey, they got eliminated by Nashville. It's close enough.
No, that's good.
It's close enough. Yeah, sure. All right, that's good. Thanks. No,
the topic is hockey.
The topic's hockey.
Yeah.
Good work, Matt.
Thanks,
Good job, good effort.
I appreciate it. So how do you assess the Hawks situation? Because I think for a while, you know, during this mini-dynasty era, the Hawks has sort of been the New England Patriots of the NHL, sort of immune to criticism. And you've got Stan Bowman. He's got that great system, the top-heavy system. You pay the star players, the mini-star core. You bring in the depth guys from the farm system. You replace from within. Over and over, it's worked extremely well. Mm-hmm. But now this core is starting to age, especially on defense, and the Hawks have been eliminated in the first round 2 years in a row. And we even heard Stan Bowman hint that he's got to make big changes. What do you guys think? Do you think it's still a blip on the radar? Or is it time for Chicago to, say, look at L.A. and think, hey, their run ended, maybe ours will too?
Well, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to give the pointy head a little bit of credit here. Because
That's dumb?
Yeah, that's dumb. Yeah. Generally speaking, the nerds took a shit kicking in round one. Like, they got dummied in a few series, which is kind of nice to see.
Because it's abnormal.
Yeah, but they were right on with Nashville. Dom was right on with Nashville. He's wearing his Nashville t-shirt or whatever the hell
jersey.
It is.
Jersey.
Yeah, and so, no, it's sweater.
Because
there's no such thing as a jersey in hockey.
Yes, there is. Save it for the summer podcast.
It's a sweater, so it's
no,
a sweater.
It's not.
It's a hockey sweater.
It's not. It doesn't even have sleeves. How can it be a sweater?
Anyways,
a sweater. Get off my lawn.
Anyways. I'm gonna give Dom his props here because you could see it coming because Dom and guys like him thought that it would happen. And good on them for thinking that. But what troubles me the most is how it happened. Like, three goals. And Joel Quenneville said at the end of the series, we couldn't find the all-out button. And for me, that was telling. Like, Joel Quenneville is probably the best bench coach in the NHL, probably has a better feel for who's going on his team and who isn't on any given night and any given series, and makes adjustments accordingly, and tried to do it in this series and failed miserably. So, like, now are we looking at a team whose championship window is closing a lot faster than we thought? Maybe. Maybe. And if that's the case, then what do you do? You got, like, it, if you're going to change this team and you see this coming, isn't it obvious? You got to trade one of Tanner, Taves, or Kane, don't you? You got to do it. Like, if you make that determination, isn't that what you got to do?
Yeah, and I think the way to do it is to do it now and to get ahead of things. And we mm-hmm. look at the Blackhawks, and Stan Bowman has been so progressive in terms of how he's attacked the salary cap, how he's kept that core together and had success, then maybe this is the time to say, trade Patrick Kane, get...
I'd go...
Definitely, Taves. You'd go Taves?
I'd go Taves.
Fair enough. But for the sake of argument, if it's Kane, maybe send him to Buffalo. You'd be loved there.
The Kane brothers.
The Kane brothers. Wow. But wow. you get a high first-round pick. You get a bunch of picks, let's face it. You get some... high-end prospect.
Ooh, Kane and Eichel? Ooh, Kane baby, and Eichel? That'd be pretty sexy.
That'd be pretty fun.
Wow, I'm starting to come around. I'm starting to like this from Buffalo's.
You're getting maximum value right now for a player that has done everything for you. He's won everything. But you know you have to move on. And, you know, Chicago's had some decent prospects, despite the fact that they haven't picked early in quite a while. But you can only go so far with pretty decent prospects. They need to refill. They need to get a high-end player, whether it's, you know, a high first-round pick or like an Alex Nylander, somebody that obviously the Sabres are very high on, that his career is just beginning, but he is, you know, an elite talent in that respect. Those are the kind of bold moves that when you say them out loud, it sounds crazy, but they happen, and they have to happen because you need to have that refresh. Even the best teams eventually... Sidney Crosby's not going to play for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Same with Malkin. What are the Pittsburgh Penguins going to do? Are they just going to wait until those guys retire and then regress to 28th place? No, they're going to make
like
moves.
Vancouver did it with the Sedins.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. These are the bold moves that if you can pull it off, it's a great thing. And, you know, you have to make those decisions at some point.
Mm-hmm. I got to disagree here. Because you bring up Crosby and Malkin, I think a couple of years ago when Penguins were getting bounced in the first round, seemingly every year, everyone was saying, yeah, you got to move Malkin, when it was basically an overreaction to what is basically weighted coin flips that we're all watching here for sport. I mean...
You make it sound so romantic, though.
Yeah, really? Seriously? You crunch all these numbers and now all you're saying it's a coin flip? That's what Why should we listen to you nerds then? Why the hell do we even listen to you nerds?
Weighted.
Okay. I'm walking back your earlier praise saying that our nerds called it, because we didn't call Nashville sweeping. I mean, in my mind, I really, really wanted
Chicago.
No,
you called them winning, though. You said they would win.
I said they would win,
and
but...
I think a lot of people agreed with you.
Yeah, like a lot of people said they... could win, they should win. They're giving them more credit than other people who were saying Chicago was an overwhelming favorite, which they weren't. There's a lot of signs saying Chicago was not as good as we thought they were, but that doesn't mean they were a bad team. Chicago still had a lot of good players. Their top guys, their core is as good as many in the league, and I think this would be a gigantic overreaction to going up against Pekka Rinne, who isn't that great, mm-hmm. and somehow put up a 970 in four games. You don't expect that from any team, and I think they shouldn't do anything too drastic. They built their own grave with the Seabrook contract and some other things they did, but I mean, I don't like the Kane and Taves contract, but they're still great players, and I think trading them now, you're not probably getting as good value as you can.
It's interesting. I don't know if I agree, because I think you see different tendencies with these Hawks teams, especially this year. We saw the possession numbers were different. Like, this year, the team was not the same team mm-hmm. anymore. I don't know if I would go as far as trading a Taves or a Kane, but to me, I look at the Hawks' blue line, I still think... Like, Duncan Keith still has a pretty good cap hit. It's like $5.2 million or something. Yeah. It's, you know, it does last for the rest of time, but, you know, we can put that aside. I'd be looking at shopping someone like Duncan Keith. Nicholas Hjalmarsson, because to me, the Hawks' blue line, they're getting old. All of their impact guys are getting closer to 30 or are already older than 30 years old. I think you have to start restocking that blue line with younger guys. Maybe you get someone, maybe it's in a trade. Maybe someone who's a good young body who's able to contribute now in a trade. But I think also you need to get prospects. The Hawks, their blue line prospects mm-hmm. are not elite, at least at forward. You do have Alex DeBrincat coming, who I think could make a big impact. But the system for the Hawks, they need defense. I think that's what you saw in the Nashville series. Like, the Predators could move the puck from the back end in a way that Chicago could not. They could not match it. I think that's the biggest problem for the team going forward.
Okay.
Yeah. It's interesting because, I mean, if I look at Chicago's prospects, I mean, Lucas Carlson, I think, has potential. They've also got the one and only
Chad Chris
who is an office favorite here. So they do have some good mobility coming up. It's with the forwards, you know, I think Nick Schmaltz is a pretty good player. With DeBrincat, I think he's the kind of guy that he will succeed because it's Chicago, and you could put him on a line with Taves as his center, with Panarin as his center, and he's in the perfect spot where he can find those soft areas and he can use that great release of his to score goals. But I think he's a complementary NHL player where you need to have him on a line with somebody that can, you know, attract attention and really drive possession, because DeBrincat is, he's not big and he's not a blazing speed kind of guy. But, I mean, it's interesting. I don't think, you know, I know what you're saying, Dom. I don't think they need to blow it up right away, but I think if you have, like, one more season where it's looking kind of shaky, then you start saying, we need to look long-term because eventually this vaunted core is going to get too old, and we want to get in front of it. We don't want to be chasing.
Yeah, you got to at least consider it, especially if you can win the trade based on the pedigree that those two guys have. For everyone sure. probably still thinks Taves is a top 10 center, like, without a doubt. And the season before he went on that huge hot streak, he was looking nothing like that, and then that hot streak pushed him back around that area. But I still don't think he's, like, what was he, like, a top 5 center at one point? I don't think he's there anymore.
It's a, man, I can't get this Kane Eichel tandem out of my head now. It's badass, man. I want to see that. It's funny, so you have a lot of doom and gloom about the Hawks, their exit, but on the other side you have the Leafs, a team that just got eliminated in the first round, but so much optimism about the team. And I, for one, share that optimism, and I was tweeting this, you know, it, depending on what teams do in the offseason, based on the rosters right now, if I had to pick the Atlantic Division next year, I would pick the Leafs absolutely to win the Atlantic Division. So I'm curious what you guys think. I got to toss that out there. How do you feel about the team's forecast after watching that series?
I think it's quite positive. I wouldn't go so far as to have them first in the Atlantic. I think if I was picking right now, I'd say Tampa Bay. That feels like the type of core that would be very, very upset about how things ended up this season and would come back with a vengeance. But, I mean, you look at the forwards they have, you know, we've only seen the first season of Auston Matthews. It's only going to get better, you know? I mean, unless something crazy happens. You know, same with Nylander, same with Marner. I think, you know, Nazem Kadri has figured out who he is as an NHLer, and the rest of the league is not happy with it. But that's fine if you're the Leafs. I think if you look at the defense core, that's where they can really make some moves to bolster things. I thought it was kind of funny. Some of the folks out in Vancouver that I follow on Twitter, they're already trying to figure out what they can get in return for Chris Tanev from Toronto. They're like, do you think we could get Nylander in a first rounder? No. God. They're like, no, that would be too much. Maybe Kapanen in a first rounder. You know, they're already trying to figure out.
But like, I think from Vancouver's perspective, they're going to try and get Edler to waive his no trade and move him. I don't know if moving Chris Tanev is the right move for Vancouver even.
Well, I don't know if it's what they want to do so much as, like, would you rather, if you're Toronto, are you asking for Edler? Or are you saying, we want Tanev, how can we make this happen?
Does Vancouver make right moves anymore?
Yeah, I don't know if that's a thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look, you know, if the Leafs could somehow get Tanev, or I would even say Carl Alsner, I think, would be a good option to shore things up. Yeah, maybe he's not a possession.
Dom's making like, a face.
Like a safe, you know, a safe guy.
I don't like that at all.
Fair enough. Or if there's
a
way,
I like it a lot better than I like Kevin Shattenkirk at the moment.
Yeah, really. Or if they can find a way of getting, say, Marc-Edouard Vlasic from San Jose, either this year or the next year once his contract runs out. Who knows where the Sharks are going to be in terms of their window
at
that
point. Bring
all the
Sharks in. Thornton, Marlowe, Vlasic.
Hey, why not?
I want to toss Josh Manson out there. Yeah, Anaheim's going to have to trade. They're going to have to trade a defenseman. Manson's tough. Played tough minutes this year, would be relatively cheap compared to bigger names like Tanev.
Right.
I'd be the guy I'd target if I were the Leafs.
There you go. But I think the Leafs, based on the entry-level deals that they're going to be able to sort of coast off for a bit, I think they can splurge on a veteran guy. Hey, maybe you get Manson and Tanev.
Hey-o!
Let's go crazy. but if they can bolster that back end, bring in some experienced guys who can just sort of settle things down, help out a guy like Nikita Zaitsev, who had a great rookie season but played like a rookie in the playoffs, which is not, you know, it's understandable. Freddie Anderson looks like he's the answer in net.
Yeah.
And obviously they can score up front. So it seems like it's just a matter of, you know, add skill and wait 1 year and see how far they can go.
Yeah, I share the optimism too. I think they're going to be a very, very good team for a long time. But I'm not ready to coronate them a Stanley Cup champion anytime soon. I mean, the Washington Capitals haven't gotten out of the second round yet, you know?
It's because of the format.
It took Steve Yzerman 14 years to win a Stanley Cup in Detroit. It's not as easy as people think, and it's just not a matter of putting together a bunch of good players, because in a couple of years, all those good players' contracts end up coming up. And you've got to find a way to keep them all happy and keep them all paid and keep them all engaged in the cause and all that stuff. So I do think the Leafs are going to be a really good team. I think they're going to be an elite team. I don't know how much better. I'm probably going to sound stupid, but I think Auston Matthews is going to get better. Is he going to put up better numbers? Is he going to score more than he scored this year? Like, is he going to be a 50-goal scorer? Maybe. Maybe he is.
Off the assist.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's the key.
He'll be an 80-point guy.
40-40?
Yeah.
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 A full year with Nylander. And I agree. I mean, I'm not saying I think the Leafs are going to win the Cup. I'm just saying, I mean, you know, if you use Washington as an example, they finished first place a few years into Ovi's career, right? Before all those playoff chokes, but they won a President's Trophy. So I do think the Leafs are going to make an improvement in the standings, because they didn't become this version of themselves till the second half of the year.
Right.
I think you're going to see more of this incarnation now they've got their lines figured out, etc. I think they'll just be a more consistent team next year.
I definitely think they can contend for first. I think they're still a piece or two away from being the favorite, but I think they're right there with Tampa Bay for competing there. This year they got really unlucky with shootouts. I think they were like, 1-8 or something? I mean, you put those points back on the board, they're already pretty close to 100 points. Another year with the young guys growing together, add another piece. I think they can definitely already start thinking about a cup next year. And what Ken was saying about the contracts is exactly right. In 3 years, everyone's getting paid. This is the window right now when Matthews, Nylander, Marner are all still on entry-level contracts. They got to go for it now.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I agree with that, Dom. It's interesting because guys are going to skyrocket in price. Mm-hmm. But before those deals are up, there's merit to taking your shot if you can.
Yeah.
A lot of talk about Ilya Kovalchuk possibly making a return to the NHL, and the rules would be complicated. The Devils would be the team that has his rights. In order for him to be a free agent, every team in the NHL would have to agree, which is unlikely. So the more likely scenario would be a sign and trade. So let's just, instead of debating whether it happens, because, you know, that's a bit boring, let's talk about where he might go and which team might be the best fit. I'm going to start by throwing out Montreal.
Yeah.
Because let's say you keep Radulov, and then if you find the money, I don't know how it would work, but just for fun, it would be fun to see Kovalchuk and Radulov on the same team. Have that Russian connection.
Yeah, I was going to say, can they finally give Galchenyuk some wingers in that case?
What do you guys think? Where would you picture Kovalchuk going?
It's funny because New Jersey could sadly use him. You know, like, New Jersey seems the place where it's like, we need scoring. Taylor Hall is very mad at us right now for trading for him and giving him zero support otherwise. For me, that one just kind of makes sense. Or, I mean, you know, maybe something in that division. I don't know, like, maybe the Islanders. It just seems like the Islanders or Rangers. I guess you're not going to sign and trade with one of your hated rivals. But it just seems like New Jersey makes a lot of sense.
Maybe you trick Kovalchuk if you're New Jersey. You say, like, yeah, it's a sign and trade.
Yeah.
You make him think it's a sign and trade, but you fudge the small print, and then you just sign him.
Yeah, we couldn't. Here. It fell through at the last minute. So.
Yeah, sorry. No one would take you, so you're back to the Devils.
Yeah.
He retires again.
I have no idea who has cap space to fit him right now, other than, I guess, the Leafs. He'd look pretty good with some of their young guys. I do want to say that think of what Radulov did this year. He was even better in the KHL, so like, he'll be a big addition to any team right now. I don't know where I'd put him. I want to say the Kings. I feel like they have zero cap space, though, so I'm not going to say the Kings, but That'd be a perfect fit for them, just like it was the last time he was a free agent.
What about a team like Arizona? You know, lots of cap space.
They already have Datsuk.
Good young That's players. Right. Yeah, yeah, maybe they could, yeah. But he's
Datsuk, Pronger.
But they've got a ton of cap space. They've got good young players. Mm. They got to spend the money somewhere. They got to devote that cap space to something. You know, why would you not go after an Ilya
Kovalchuk?
Sure. Tell him, look, you know, you've got a chance to really make something happen here. I don't know.
And it's warm. Yeah, and I mean,
and you
Clayton
get to,
Keller.
And you get to finish in April.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, that's what
you
happened to
Martin
Hansel.
You still get to play at the World Championship.
That's what happened to Martin Hansel. He wasn't used to playing past April 10th.
There you go.
And he couldn't
His
handle
body
it.
Clock was like, oh,
couldn't
God.
Handle it. Yeah. What is this?
He was good in the series.
Yeah, did you watch him on that overtime goal?
Oh, my God.
Couldn't handle
One play. One play.
Couldn't
handle done. Terrible.
Couldn't handle Vladimir
Dom, it's the
Sabalka.
Eyes, okay? Do you even watch hockey?
I watched every single game of that series. I could not believe what I was watching.
Time to get down to business. We've talked enough about the eliminated teams. Let's get to the teams, eight of them, who are still playing, and start making some serious picks. We'll start in the West with the Oilers and Anaheim Ducks. And to me, this is an interesting series because both teams looked really good, I think, in the first round. So it's a tough series to pick. But what do you guys think off the top of your head right now?
I'm thinking I'm going to go Oilers in seven. I feel like... I know San Jose was banged up. I think I just saw that Thornton had like an ACL and MCL tear. Yeah. But I feel like San Jose and Anaheim are fundamentally similar teams in that they play that very heavy game. Good young goaltenders and whatnot. You know, Anaheim, you know, they got that nice mobile defense. But I feel like we're going to see more McDavid. And even better McDavid. And I think now that the Oilers have their footing... It's sort of like, okay, well, we've won one series. Let's just keep this going, and they're heavy enough up front that you know they can battle with those big boys from Anaheim. So I'm on the Edmonton bandwagon for now, at least.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Anaheim in probably six or seven, because I'm not sure that. I mean, the Edmonton Oilers proved a lot in that last series. They proved a lot to me. But I'm not sure that their secondary players are good for another series that good. Again, maybe they are, and maybe it doesn't matter because McDavid's better and he picks things up. I mean, he only had two goals in the first round. He wasn't overwhelming, I don't think.
Austin Matthews. Sorry, I just wanted to troll Edmonton to make them freak out.
I don't know. I just look at the Getzlaf Kessler factor up the middle, and I think that's going to be pretty hard to beat, especially the way Getzlaf is playing in these playoffs. He's a beast. He's a monster, and I don't know. I just don't think that the Zach Cassians and the David Desharnais and those guys are going to be quite as productive in this series as they were able to be against San Jose.
Yeah, I love McDavid. I think he's going to probably go off in the series because he was a little quiet in the last one. But after that, I feel like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Mark Letestu, and David Desharnais are going
to
get their asses,
yeah.
their asses handed to them because they. I don't like that bottom nine. I don't think it's that strong. The second line is fine, but it's not like... It's not that impressive. They have the McDavid factor, but they also have him playing with like Drake...
Cajula.
I don't
know.
Caligula.
After the movie, yeah.
I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name.
He gets crazy on the road in his hotel room.
I don't know what he's doing next to McDavid. They could have had Hall there, maybe. I don't know. Oscar Klefbom was so impressive in the
very
first
good.
Round.
Very good.
I think he's gonna have a big breakout. Like everyone's gonna see how great this kid is in this playoffs. But I just, that forward group for Anaheim, their fourth line is utter crap, but the top nine is amazing, and I like their defense a lot more, so I want to take them in six, but I can't believe I'm taking a Randy Carlyle team to go to the third round, but apparently that's how it is. I want Edmonton to win, because Connor McDavid, I want to see more of him, but I just don't think they will.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dom, and I think Ken, you nailed it. It's the Kessler and Getzlaf factor. Getzlaf has been playing some of the best hockey of his career for the last 2 or 3 months.
He really
has. He's been so dominant. Yeah. And to me, it's like McDavid's going to get a steady diet of Kessler, Silverberg, Cogliano, one of the best defensive lines in all of hockey. It's not going to neutralize McDavid, but I think McDavid has shown in his career so far that if you make life hard for him, you can get some results. You can at least slow him down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's a big difference between Anaheim's defense corps and San Jose's. The Sharks have a lot of talent, but that's a much older D group than Anaheim's. Anaheim's got a lot of mobility, a lot of youth, just endless youth, boundless youth. And I think the goaltending matchup, again, is going to be pretty even. I think it's a close series, but I like the Ducks to win that in seven. And it seems like we've got three Ducks and one Oilers.
Yeah, one Oilers.
All right, okay. And you guys said, I said seven. Ryan's Oilers in seven?
Yep.
I said six. You're or six. Seven. I'll go six. Yeah.
Ducks
and
six. Okay. Staying in the West, St. Louis and Nashville. And this is, to me, this is kind of like a mirror match because you have two teams that pulled off upsets over other Central Division teams that were supposed to win, and both teams did it mainly with amazing goaltending. So, which team do you trust more in that series, the Jake Allens or the Pecorines?
That's a loaded question when you put it that way. I feel that I'm gonna stay on the Nashville train.
My boy.
Yeah, with Dom as the conductor. I feel like just with that mobile decor and everything they have going on up front, you know, it seems like Nashville's in a very good place right now where they know who they are. And, I mean, you know, they're basically a machine against the Hawks, and I think they just have those little advantages over St. Louis that'll push them through. And I'm going to say Nashville in six.
Yeah, I really want to pick Nashville because I think Dom's right about them. I mean, but I've just got a feeling about St. Louis. I think Nashville should win the series, and I think they're the better team, but I've just got a feeling about St. Louis and the way they're playing and the goaltending they're getting and the clutch scoring that they're getting and the play of guys like Vladimir Sobotka and Magnus Pajarvi and the secondary guys. I know I said Edmonton's wouldn't hold up, but I don't know. It's just, this one's an intangible one for me. It just seems to me like everything that St. Louis has done since they fired Ken Hitchcock has turned out really, really, really well. And I just see them continuing it.
I was a little worried. I was too down on St. Louis going into the playoffs because they were on an incredible roll. And then I saw them beat a great team in Minnesota in five games, and now I'm confident that I was absolutely correct that this team is not that good. The big difference between St. Louis winning five and Nashville winning in four over these very good teams was Nashville actually got the better run of play over Chicago until
they were the better team.
They were the better team. Yeah, you cannot say that about St. Louis. Jake Allen is part of the team, so you can, like, I guess you can technically say they were better. But that was a complete Jake Allen experience, and I don't think I just don't see him continuing this. I don't think Rene will either. I think we're going to see a lot of goals in the series as both goalies turn into pumpkins. But I think Nashville is the much better team. Their defense is a lot better, top to bottom. St. Louis has Pietrangelo and Parayko, who are good, and they have four other guys who are guys, and Bouwmeester, who I don't think is that good anymore. And just they have 12 good forwards, but for some reason their fourth line that they're playing, I don't know why they keep playing them. I don't like it one bit. I don't see St. Louis beating Nashville. I'm not a homer just because I'm wearing the Nashville shirt, but I don't think they're that good. Prove me wrong, St. Louis. I had a lot of you in my mentions. I just don't see it. I said Nashville in four on Twitter yesterday. That's just me being
bold. R.I.P. your mentions, bro.
Wow, Nashville in four.
That's just me being bold and not confident at all in what St. Louis showed last series. I think they had like 40% of not shots, chances, expected goals, everything under the sun. They were not good, and they got by because of incredible goals. And I think it was like I wrote a story that I stand by completely that I think it was the seventh most lopsided series since like 2007-2008. Mm-hmm. The three teams above Minnesota were the 07-08 Red Wings, one of the best teams of all time. There was the 11-12 Hawks, who won the Cup the next year and got dummied by Mike Smith. And then I think the Sharks when they played Colorado. So that's what we're dealing with here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. See, I'm with you, Dom. I don't see it with St. Louis. Yes, you have Tarasenko. That's probably the one thing the Blues have that Nashville doesn't have, but they still have Arvidsson and Philip Forsberg. I take those two over one Tarasenko. And I just think everything else Nashville does a little bit better than St. Louis. And to me, again, it's the same reason why they beat Chicago. I think the defensive depth. There are a few of any teams that can match what Nashville can bring in its top four. I think that's going to be the difference in the series. So I have the Predators taking that one in six games.
See, I think this is one of those weird years, right? Where
this is a really weird
it's
year.
It's just weird.
I've lost like, all confidence in my
like in the West. Like it could be the least sexy markets going in the West.
Nashville's a very sexy
market. Sexy market to visit.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I mean, it just seems like one of those years where the favorites are falling and someone's going to sneak through, and I don't know. It just like I said, I hear what you guys are saying about Nashville, and I fundamentally agree with it, but, I mean, sometimes there's just got to be intangibles that play a part in the playoffs. Sometimes there's just got to be goofiness that reigns, and I think in this series it might.
We already saw a lot of goofiness in round one. Why not continue? I mean, Mike Smith took those Coyotes to round three.
Yeah.
Might have the same thing happen this year. Yeah. Team chaos. Every 5 years, the playoffs make no sense. This is one of those years.
It looks like it.
Okay, so we've got three Preds picks, one Blues pick. Let's switch over to the East. Pittsburgh-Washington is such an interesting series to me.
Should we save that for last? I mean,
you want to save it for last?
It's the most interesting
series. The most exciting series?
All right.
Sure,
okay.
Let's
going to tease you guys.
Yeah.
All right. We'll go to the Rangers in Ottawa. This is the anti-analytics series. This is the FU Computer Boys series. With the two teams that had the worst possession numbers in the regular season of the playoff field.
Yeah, this is the suck-it-pointy-head series.
Yeah. They both get through. I personally don't know what to make of this series. And I feel bad for Ottawa. I just cannot stop disrespecting them. I just can't. I can't get past the fact that they're Erik Karlsson and Craig Anderson. And yet, I have this weird feeling, going to Ken here with the intangibles, there's some weird juju going on with Ottawa, and I have this I have this strange feeling that they're going to beat the Rangers.
Well,
I don't know.
And they can, as long as Erik Karlsson's not in traction. As long as he's playing, and playing the way he's playing, absolutely the Ottawa Senators could beat the New York Rangers. There is no, and I was saying this earlier to somebody else, there's no team in the league, not one, not Edmonton with McDavid, not Pittsburgh with Crosby, not anybody, there's not one team in the league that relies on one player more than the Ottawa Senators rely on Erik Karlsson.
Mm-hmm.
And he is truly a difference maker. He is a difference maker. He dictates the pace of the game, he dictates the tempo, he dictates how it's going to be played, and he delivers. And I think if he continues to play the way he has, and I'm not sure he can, given the fact that apparently he had a hairline fracture in his foot, and he's obviously been hobbled, but...
Because he's blocking shots, everyone who says he can't play defense, he's breaking his feet!
Yeah, I mean, if I'm New York, I'm going for those feet. I don't even care which one, I'll just keep shooting at them and hitting them with my stick.
Okay, Chris Kreider.
Yeah. But I... As long as Erik Karlsson's playing this way, who's to say they can't beat the Rangers?
I'm going to say that the Rangers are going to take this. I think the Rangers are the type of team that can out-boring Ottawa. You know, we talk about, you know, they have that great structure under Guy Boucher, and it's not, with the exception of Karlsson, who makes some fantastically exciting plays, you know, the point is not to be an exciting team. The point is to win games and do it in whatever fashion necessarily, and if it's 2-1, then that's cool. This is a good Craig Anderson year. This is a theory I've espoused. His save percentage seems to go up and down 10 points every other year. We're on a good Craig Anderson year. But I think the Rangers, they have that depth. They have that experience on the back end. And, you know, we talked about intangibles. I know their possession numbers were not good in the regular season. But I feel like if their only mission is to shut down Erik Karlsson, then that's something that they can do. And then you're left with a Henrik Lundqvist who is playing vintage Hank, has already out-dueled Carey Price.
Yeah.
And as good as Craig Anderson is, I would take Lundqvist in that matchup in a seven-game series. So I'm going to say New York in seven, maybe unwatchable games because of that.
Yeah, I think this could be one of the most least interesting series I...
One of the most least interesting series?
I don't get paid for words.
What a word! You're such a word smith.
You get paid for numbers. Bleep, bloop, blarp.
This series... 0-1, 1-1, 0-1.
These teams are... they're not interesting, and it's just unfair that Pittsburgh and Washington have to kill each other, and these guys, la-di-da, get to play each other. One of them gets a free pass to the third round to get obliterated, probably. Before the first round, I didn't have much respect for either team. After watching the first round, I've come around a little bit to both of them, just a little bit. With Ottawa, I think we're all seeing what they were at the start of the year, which was a house of cards. They were going to fall apart, and then they made some deadline moves that kicked out some terrible players from their bottom... from the bottom of their lineup, and then they got Clark MacArthur back, and that's a big deal because he's a great player for their bottom six, and now they're suddenly a team that can somehow roll four lines. And they have Mark Stone and Mike Hoffman, who I think would they be the best forwards on the Rangers. Is there anyone on the Rangers you would take over those two guys? Maybe
not over Mark Stone.
Maybe not,
Hoffman,
yeah.
I like Chris Kreider, but it's close. You're
yeah,
right.
I think
JT Miller is good, but not. I would take Stone over every Ranger forward.
I think those two Ottawa forwards are really good, and I don't think.
And Bobby Ryan has learned how to spell intensity. Apparently,
Bobby Ryan is coming clutch.
He's learned how to
right?
spell it. He's gotten it into his lexicon. And just don't take a penalty against Ottawa in overtime.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
I'm coming around on Ottawa. I thought they were a terrible team. I think they're at least average now. I don't know how, my model has them favored in the series. I have no confidence in that whatsoever. I don't have no confidence in how it rates either of these two teams because they defy all logic, defy all expectations. I think the Rangers will win. I'm going against my own math here. I think the Rangers will win. I think they do something magical that our current data does not, I guess, account for. The way they play on the rush, the way they create chances for themselves. And they have Lundqvist, who is vintage Lundqvist, and I don't think you can beat vintage Lundqvist.
It's so, you know what? It's so close that I decided secretly to just listen to what all you guys say and then decide my pick officially. Uh-huh. I think I'm going Rangers in seven because logic dictates the matchup. I mean, again, it's Lundqvist over Anderson, and also what I like about the Ranger forwards, they have several lines that have really good size and physicality, and that's a recipe to beat up Erik Karlsson. They have so many different guys, Kevin Hayes, Miller, Kreider, Nash. They got good size. Those guys can bang. I think I'm going Rangers in seven, but I don't know. It's so close. Boston? I think the series is going to be sneaky good because it's going to be so evenly matched.
Boston had those big guys too, and Erik Karlsson, you can't catch him. You can't catch him, so I feel like that's a huge factor. There's no one on the Rangers back end that can match what Karlsson does for its ends.
But the Rangers are fast too. The Rangers' big guys are also big fast guys. They're not Matt Beleski's, all due respect to
not
Matt
wrong.
Beleski.
Not wrong.
Okay, now it's time for the dessert. Pittsburgh, Washington, you've waited. We've delayed the gratification.
The real Stanley Cup final.
The real Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, I was going to get my question. Is this the de facto Stanley Cup final?
I think it isn't. The thing I'm wondering about, I can't decide yet. Again, maybe I'll let this conversation decide.
We should make it go
is
first.
Washington?
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. The Leafs, to me, the Pittsburgh style of play, I think, is a more mature, better version of the Leafs. They play really high tempo. They get a lot of shot attempts. They remind me of how Toronto plays, but they're more experienced. They're champions. So based on that, I see the Penguins as a really bad matchup for Washington based on what we saw from the Leafs, who gave them a huge scare, five overtime games. On the other hand, was this the scare? Was round one the scare that Washington had to overcome?
Yeah.
They played in five overtime games. They won three of them. And are they now mentally strong enough to handle Pittsburgh? I don't know, but I'm curious what you guys think.
Well, I'm down on Washington at the moment. I think that one team in that Toronto-Washington made that series close. And that team was not the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Washington Capitals made that series close. They did not prove to me in any way, shape, or form that they're a championship-caliber team. They just didn't do it. They didn't run away with this series when they had the chance. They had in Game 3, they had a 3-1 lead with a full 2 minutes of 5-on-3 and did nothing. And then ended up losing the game. You know, Game 4, they're up 4-1, cruise control. they almost gagged that one up. They have done very, very little other than score in overtime to prove to me that they're a championship caliber team. And I just want to say, F you, Washington. I'm never picking you again to do anything. Like, you piss me off all the time. Fool me once, shame F on you. Fool me freaking 1,000 times, shame on everybody.
But they won the series.
Shame on everybody. Yeah.
Ken just made the Washington Capitals Stanley Cup champion.
So anyways, I agree with you, Matt. I think if the Capitals, there were two things. They didn't handle the Leafs' speed very well at all, and they didn't assert themselves in this series. They didn't dictate the tempo. They didn't dictate the pace. They didn't come out physical. They showed way too much respect to the Leafs, I thought. And unless they turn those two things around in a big way against Pittsburgh, they're not going to win. And I'm forget it, Washington. To hell, I'm done with you. Yeah. I'm done with you. I'm sorry. I'm finished. Until you do it, I'm not picking you. Goodbye.
I love this narrative so much. I've looked at what other people have for this series. The betting lines opened as, I think, near a coin flip, slight edge to Washington because of home ice. But most of the models I've seen, including mine, have Washington around 60%, which would make it one of the most lopsided series in this, I think, round. I think the reason for that is Pittsburgh's underlying numbers weren't that good this year. So that gets factored into people that use just team stats. I think they were one of the middling Corsi teams, mm-hmm. or whatever. I think they're better than those numbers say, but they still are without Chris Letang, and now their defense has six guys. Would you put their defense ahead of the Leafs at this point? The Leafs' defense was not good, and I'm not sure I'd put the Pens' defense over that right now. They have a very deep forward group, and that'll be scary, but they also have that defense, plus not Matt Murray in net. And as good as Fleury was in the first round, I don't think he has what it takes to stop the Washington offense, which is not as deep as Pittsburgh's, but still pretty good, and they have a much better defense group. I think from top to bottom, this team has a lot of balance, and they can... I think this is the year they can take down the Penguins, mostly because Letang is not there.
Yeah. Looking at the two teams, I was thinking that, going off this idea that this is a crazy year in the playoffs, you know, Pittsburgh didn't have much trouble dispatching Columbus. They've had a lot of time to rest. Washington obviously had to grind it out against the Leafs. It only went six games, but when you factor in all the overtimes, it's more like seven or eight. I think that the wake-up call Washington needed was that first-round series. I think they have the talent to go very far, to even win the Stanley Cup for that matter. And when the Leafs gave them all they could take, now they're saying, like, okay, it's real. Like, there are no cakewalks. We can't take anything for granted. And I think with Pittsburgh, like you said, it's a banged-up defense, no Chris Letang. I think Washington is going to be in – they're going to be in the proper mode already. They're clicking. I'm not going to say they're clicking on all cylinders, but, like, the adrenaline's up right now. Whereas with Pittsburgh, I think usually you would say, like, oh, they're rested. They're going to be – they've got them right where they wanted to. But it's a crazy year. I think Washington's going to carry that momentum. And I'm just going to go crazy pick. I'm going to say Washington in five.
Woo! Well, you know what? To me, Washington is that dumb teenager that sits there and looks at you when you try to give him advice, and he goes, yeah, you're right. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, I totally get it, coach.
So just dumb.
I totally get it, coach. Yeah, for
just
sure.
Like me.
For sure, yeah. Like, yeah, oh, no, yeah, for sure. I'm not going to do that. And then they go out and do it. Uh-huh. They think they can just throw their sticks out there. And then win on talent all the time. Will over skill. They're all wearing these t-shirts. Will over skill.
Who's Will?
Are you kidding me? Will over skill.
Will over skill. Yeah, I don't
They're
like
pissing
that.
Pissing me off more and more all the time, these guys.
I do think there's a... Washington will have a major, obviously, goaltending advantage in the series, and it's going to keep it close. But I don't know. To me, the games that the Leafs struggled against Washington were the games where the Leafs started playing a little scared, and they held back and they stopped skating. Yeah. You know what team is never going to play scared? Pittsburgh. That's not going to be a problem. There's going to be no mental block. They play with such speed, and we know how much trouble that gives Washington. And I'm not actually that worried about Chris Letang being absent because, again, with no Chris Letang, Columbus was still the fourth-best team in the NHL. Pittsburgh beat them in five games with no Chris Letang because the system is so strong, and the system is designed under Mike Sullivan. The system's designed to minimize the puck time for all those kind of Motley Crue defensemen. They just, boom, they fire it up the ice. Stretch passes, use the speed. It's pretty well established. That's what this Pittsburgh team is. And I just think they're a kryptonite matchup again for Washington, because if there's one thing Washington doesn't have that's elite, I think the only thing they don't have that's elite is speed. They're not slow per se. They have some fast guys, but they have a lot of slow guys too. And I think it's going to be a problem. I think Pittsburgh, it's like they just keep bringing in more and more guys. Now it's Jake Guentzel's turn, and I think they're going to do it to Washington again. I'm going to say Penguins in six.
Yeah, I'm going to say Penguins in seven.
I maintain my crazy pick of Washington in five.
I like it, I like it.
I'm saying Washington in seven. Pittsburgh is playoff scary, which means they're the scariest team. People fear them, but before them, the most playoff scary team was Chicago, and they got swept. So playoff scary doesn't matter that much, but Washington's below them because they're afraid of the Pens. Obviously, that's just how playoff scary works. This is an article on The Ringer by Shea Serrano, one of the best articles.
Yeah, they disrespected the Raptors, but I guess he was right.
I wrote one about hockey, and the scariest team was swept. Playoff scary doesn't matter that much. Caps in seven.
I wonder if Nick Backstrom, like when I was talking to him last night, he said, "Oh, this is perfect. This is perfect. We're the underdogs. They're the Stanley Cup champs. We're the underdogs."
They're like, not the underdogs.
Yeah, no, I know they're not.
Not a good sign. You win the President's Trophy and you're already calling yourself an underdog?
Well, what I didn't like about last night, and I was in their room, was Ted Leonsis and all these minority owners running around, hugging guys and taking pictures in there. Like,
it's first round, boys.
Championship teams don't act like that.
And you beat like the team of children.
Like it's their first rodeo. And one guy goes up to Braden Holtby and he says, "Hey, don't believe everyone. You don't suck." He said that to Braden Holtby, one of their minority owners last night. It was a surreal scene. It really was in that dressing room. And it just seemed like from the franchise side of it, the ownership side, it was like, man, we're so happy to be here. And they were taking pictures and everything. It was very bizarre. Very, very bizarre.
Poor culture.
Yeah. Weird. Very weird. Well, I don't know about you guys. I feel extra excited now about this round after talking through this series. I hope you enjoy the second round, everybody, and we'll be back next week for more hockey talk.